Welcome, Voltron fans around the world, to another exciting episode of Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, where we cover everything Voltron, past, present, and future. As we get closer and closer to the release of Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix later this year, every one of these podcasts are getting more and more exciting, so don't miss a single one. Tell your friends who have been closet Voltron fans for years and have been thinking you're a freak for loving Voltron so much that their days of hiding their love of a Super Sentai multicolored line-combining robot will soon be over. Tell them to head to letsvoltron.com and see what we have to offer. Over 50 episodes of interviews with producers, writers, and actors from the shows, comic book writers and artists, toys and collectibles manufacturers, and Voltron fans from all over. We've had a succession of episode reviews from the original show that started it all in 1984 with comparisons to the Japanese show Beast King Go Lion. We've talked at length about Vehicle Voltron and Voltron the Third Dimension, and we're still waiting to have a full show about Voltron Force. Jeremy and Todd. Obviously, you're going to get more than an earful of Voltron Legendary Defender and all the DreamWorks, Netflix, merchandise, etc. goodness that comes with it. By the way, if this is your first time listening to any of the podcast episodes, thank you so much for taking your precious time out to hear us talk about our favorite giant robot and all the pilots that make up the Voltron Force. I am Mark Morrell, your host. I was one of the writers on the Voltron Compendium, released by Perfect Square in 2014, Voltron from Days of Long Ago, which, if you haven't picked up a copy yet, please do, with the understanding that there's much more to write about in Voltron's future. Because this ain't over by a long shot. Keith is just getting those interlocks, dinotherms, infracells, and megathrusters warmed up. And certainly, I'm in a position where I must be able to call upon others to help me form Voltron for all of these podcasts. I simply cannot bring the lions together by myself. So I want to introduce you to someone who you've heard on the podcast before. Someone who has graciously volunteered to make a commitment to join me as a co-host for Let's Voltron full time. Welcome, Greg Tyler.
Mark, thank you. It's a thrill to follow in the Voltron-sized footsteps left by Jeremy Corey and Michael French. I hope I can live up to the standards they set. To those who are new to this podcast and haven't heard me on here before, I've been a guest in a few episodes. As a quick overview, I'm a first-generation Voltron fan. I enjoy Defender of the Universe in the 80s, both Lion Force and Vehicle Team. I also like Voltron the Third Dimension and Voltron Force, and I look forward to liking Voltron Legendary Defender. I think this year is going to be a really exciting one for fans. It already has been with the teasers that we've had of the upcoming show. And I look forward to exploring this next chapter in the Legend of Voltron with you, Mark, and with fans old and new. So let's Voltron.
Yeah, let's Voltron. All right, I want to thank you so much for joining me as a co-host. And I realize it's a huge responsibility that we have as Voltron fan ambassadors to bring this information to the Voltron fans, to share what the Voltron fans are saying about Voltron and everything that we do. And then, just to be able to try to give that extra special, in-depth look at a lot of the different things that Voltron has been involved with over the years.
Yeah, I look forward to looking back, looking ahead at Voltron's past and present and future.
Just this past weekend, there was a movie that was released that went to number one, okay, very quickly. And it's a rated R movie. It turned out that by the end of the weekend, it was the biggest rated R movie opening ever. We're talking about Deadpool, of course.
I've heard very good things about it.
All right. Obviously, you don't want to take your kids to see this movie. Okay? There's a lot of people that kind of got confused because it is a Marvel movie. But it is definitely rated R for a lot of different reasons, for strong sexual content, for bad language, for decapitations and all kinds and all that kind of stuff. But obviously, the thing that shocked a lot of people was that Deadpool seems to be a Voltron fan.
Now, you'd think he'd be a Beast Kingo Lion fan with all the violence that you've talked about, but right. Hey.
So it appears there was a scene in it where he was in the amusement center and traded in all of his tickets for a Voltron ring.
Oh, wow. So, is this the ring that's actually available at Voltron.com?
I don't know, but I do know that he talks about, you know, the five mini lions that come together to form a giant robot and everything. And I mean, he's mentioned several times in the movie, and I think that is totally awesome.
Well, sure.
That we're getting that kind of fan blood coming through a huge movie like Deadpool.
Sure.
Especially on the cusp of this new show coming out on Netflix, which they announced last week was called Voltron Legendary Defender.
Mm-hmm.
And it introduced the logo and the title announced exclusively on Nerdist and then to the rest of the world. So what did you think about the logo and the sort of the poster style that it came with?
Well, it teases, as teasers do. There's not a lot concrete to go on, but what we get is exciting stuff. It's always better to have something rather than nothing. You know, you can sort of hear rumor about a possible new show, but to actually see a logo and the teaser poster and even a silhouette of our favorite Big Bot, that's really something. So, again, not a lot to chew on, but what little there is pretty tantalizing. So I'm looking forward to getting more info in the coming months.
Right. It seemed to be the silhouette was more of like a Gundam style. Didn't it seem like that to you?
It definitely wasn't Gangnam style.
No, I mean,
but yeah, no,
like
I know
Super
what you mean.
Gundam, you know what I mean?
I was being silly. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it had a very, almost like gladiator-like proportions. I sort of got like a Spartacus sort of a vibe when I saw it. But yeah, it's definitely a more of a sculpted look than we saw in the 80s. I think that the wings look more substantial. Again, it's hard to glean much out of a silhouette, but what I saw looked like it promises to be a cool new design.
Yeah, a lot of the fans got really excited. They were obviously talking about it a lot on Twitter and Facebook and everything. So we got to see a lot of that. Everybody seems excited. It seems to be generating a lot of interest, you know, with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing that came up that just came up this past weekend was the fact that New York Toy Fair happened. And we saw an image from a booth where they were announcing that Voltron Legendary Defender toy line would be coming out in spring of 2017, and this was at the Playmates Toys booth.
That's exciting stuff. Playmates, to those of you who, to the listeners who may not know, is most well known for its seemingly endless toy line for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think they've pretty much been continuously producing new toys since the late 1980s. They also in the 1990s and I believe right into the beginning of the 21st century were big into Star Trek. And if there's one thing you can glean from TMNT and Star Trek, it's that when Playmates grabs a property, a licensed property, they don't let go. they keep making, you know, more and more items. So if Voltron Legendary Defender is indeed a hit with its target demographic, I think we can expect a whole lot of really cool stuff from them. So I'm very excited to hear about it.
Yeah, they also have the Ben 10 line coming out in 2017 as well.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So one of the pictures that I saw when I was looking up the pictures for the New York Toy Fair was that for the action figures and accessories category, their line for TMNT was number one in sales in 2015.
I wouldn't doubt it. One thing I've noticed that's unique with Playmates for its demographic is that they have not abandoned some of the classic toy concepts that those of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s kind of hold dear, which is I'm speaking specifically of playsets. You know, Michael French of Retro Blasting has been on this podcast before as a co-host, and one of the things that he and I agree on is that modern toys seem to have abandoned the concept of a playset or the action. Yeah, the action hero dollhouse, if you will. You know, Star Wars had the incredible Death Star playset in the late 70s, and a number of other really cool playsets. You know, the GoBots had their command center. Voltron had its Castle of Lions from Panache Place. Right. But in the decades since the 80s and perhaps through maybe the early 90s, we haven't seen a lot of that. But Playmates, just as recently as a year or two ago, released an enormous sewer lair playset that stood some 3 or 4 feet tall. It's absolutely enormous. And so they've got the classic toy things going on. They've jumped into the Imaginext sort of realm, the Fisher-Price Imaginext realm with the TMNT half-shell heroes, with the smaller size characters with the chunkier proportions for the younger age groups, say 3 to 7 years of age. I'm hoping, and I have no inside information. I'm a fan like all the rest of us, but I'm hoping that Playmates will jump into sort of two different age brackets with the Voltron toys. I would love to see something of the Imaginext half-shell heroes caliber for the very young crowd, and then something that's a little more traditionally action figure-oriented, like the TMNT regular figures or something like that for the slightly older kid crowd with Voltron. I think there's a whole lot of potential here, and I'm very excited to see what Playmates will come up with.
I think we're finally going to get those Voltron toys at a price point that we can actually afford.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a line of action figures and accessories that we're going to love, you know,
yeah.
And it's something we're going to buy for the kids. And, you know, if we're collectors too, we might just keep a couple for ourselves as well.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be keeping more than a couple. But yeah, I do plan to purchase some for my daughter if she digs Voltron as much as the new show as much as I probably will. I actually was a huge Star Trek collector of various things, including the various Playmates toys made back in the 90s. And they made some really good stuff and continue to make some great stuff. So I look forward to seeing. I guess I'm most excited about the possibility of action figures, because that's something that Voltron surprisingly hasn't had a whole lot of, with the exception of Panache Place in the 80s. And Trendmasters in the 90s, and then Matty Collector earlier in this decade. You know, right. most of the licensees have focused on the Big Bot himself, and you know, with good reason. I mean, it's very iconic, but the people are what drive that robot. So I'm very excited to see what we might see, you know, in terms of action figures for the various characters from the new show.
Yeah, in recent years, we've only had really just collectible items that have come out, and they've been rather on the expensive side. And it hasn't been, 17 or 18 years since that Trendmasters line came out that we've had a full line of toys for a particular show.
Right. I'm bummed still that Voltron Force never got the toy line love that the 80s show got, or that the Third Dimension got. So one thing, I actually went into Toys R Us today, and I'm not ashamed to admit I go to Toys R Us at least once a week just to see what's going on, and not just to show to take my 4-year-old there, but for my own geeky interests as well. And one thing I noticed very recently is that Playmates has a TMNT history action figure pack, where they had a Leonardo. They had 7 or 8 different figures of Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. They were basically re-releases of Leonardo at different stages in the Playmates toy line over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, wouldn't it be cool if the Legendary Defender toys for Voltron were so popular that they decided to make toys of from past Voltron shows, like Voltron Force? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be sort of like how when you buy baseball cards or football cards or something, they have reminders of the players in different stages in their careers. And then, you know, you see them in different gold foil or silver foil or things like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so, you know, we've talked about how this toy line is coming out in 2017, and we haven't had a toy line since Trendmasters. Well, we actually have somebody on the program today that's going to talk to us about those Trendmasters toys and even some of the prototypes. So why don't you get started with that?
Yes, Mark. We'll be speaking with Jonathan Shaikovsky. I discovered Jonathan through his Facebook interest in Trendmasters. He has a group called Trendmasters Prototype Toys, and he has a Flickr page that is one of the most lavishly illustrated guides to any toy line that I've ever seen. I would say that his Flickr page rivals Yojo.com in terms of depth of coverage of a toy line. You know, Yojo.com covers G.I. Joe and the Star Wars Collectors Authority, SWCA, covers Star Wars in depth. I would say that Jonathan's Flickr page and his Facebook group probably give the same attention, if not more so, to the various products that Trendmasters has made over the years. So I reached out to him and asked if he'd speak with us about his interest in Trendmasters with a focus on Voltron.
Cool.
In the late 1990s, Voltron returned to television, first as The New Adventures of Voltron, a repackaging of select Lion Force episodes of the 1980s television series, and then as Voltron the Third Dimension. Accompanying both series was a range of licensed toys made by Trendmasters. To celebrate the return of classic episodes of Voltron, Trendmasters re-released the iconic 1980s Matchbox Lion Force Voltron, also including a blazing sword, the spinning laser blade, mouth blades, and other accessories that had never been bundled with the Matchbox version. For Voltron the Third Dimension, Trendmasters sold action figures, transforming and non-transforming Voltron robots of various sizes, a kid-sized blazing sword, and much more. In this episode of Let's Voltron, we're happy to welcome special guest Jonathan Shaikovsky. Jonathan is a dedicated fan of Trendmasters toys, including many that were never released. Jonathan probably has the world's largest collection of Trendmasters toy prototypes. He administers a Facebook group called Trendmasters Prototype Toys, and he has a Flickr page that is essentially an online museum of Trendmasters prototypes. Jonathan isn't a Voltron fan per se, but as a Trendmasters aficionado, his knowledge and interest in Trendmasters products extends to Voltron, and it's for this reason that we've reached out to Jonathan. Jonathan, welcome to Let's Voltron.
Well, thank you for having me.
Great to hear from you. I've known you on Facebook for quite some time. It's good to hear your voice. Before we dive into Trendmasters, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, let's see. I'm a big kid at heart, so I've always had a fondness for toys. And back in 1993, 94 period, I auditioned to or submitted a bunch of drawings to get into a classical animation program here in Canada at Sheridan College. And I was kept on the waiting list for quite some time and got into another program. But funny enough, I actually didn't go to that college because they didn't have a salad bar. That's a true story because, you know, I try to be healthy and whatnot. So I was like, you don't have a salad bar, then I can't go to school here. So I got into Sheridan at the last minute. And as I was thinking back about that, it was a very vigorous program of 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears. 2,000 people apply, and 150 of us got in, and 47 of us graduated. So left, right, and center, you know, I remember the gathering of the school, and I'm watching these other people like myself that were, you know, drawing these amazing sketches that seemed definitely worthy of Disney quality. And there I was thinking, well, I could always draw, but I used to struggle. And that was why I was at the program. And the coordinator of the program, who I'm actually still friends with these days, you know, we get together for dinners and whatnot. He spoke to the 150 of us and said, look to the person to your left, look to the person to your right. Chances are in a few weeks, they won't be here. Wow. I was like, well, yeah, that it was that intense. And, you know, people may laugh and say, well, we were told that the program was more intense than med school because you had to learn the human body inside and out in order to make it move on paper. So I used to say what we did was more difficult than Tom Cruise, because if you can make your drawings act, you know, it's a drawing. And I mean, I'm thinking, it's funny enough, right now I'm surrounded by Iron Giant prototype parts of Trendmasters because I'm making another Frankenstein prototype because I had a whole bunch of parts, had to buy a production version, and I'm kind of interchanging the parts. Now, the Iron Giant cartoon, have you guys seen that? I know, Greg, you like robots, and you must as well, Mark, so you guys have seen that film?
You're talking about the Brad Bird film?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I actually have not, but it's on my list.
Really? You have not? Wow. I got to tell you, you should go out right after this podcast and get a copy of that and watch it, because it is without a doubt the all-time, I think, best animated film. You know, like it takes place in the 50s, but the fact is you need a box of Kleenex to get through it. And, you know, it's got its sad moments and whatever, but if it doesn't touch you, then I think there's a problem. And I remember watching it first, you know, because when I teach a class on how to draw comic books with the kids, I give everybody a free copy of The Iron Giant, because it was long before these kids were born, 1999. And I'm just sitting in the back and I start crying and I'm trying to, cover that up. And the kids are like, "Are you okay?" Yeah, there's something in my eye. You know, it's classic like that. But the movie is so amazing. And then I just found out that, you know, it's being re-released now as a signature DVD with a couple of extra scenes. So anyways, long story short, you know, I survived the program. 47 of us graduated. I then went to work for 8 years working on a bunch of popular cartoon shows like Arthur and Caillou. And, you know, those shows, from what I read about on Facebook, they take a lot of abuse. But I never saw any of the episodes. I know Arthur won an Emmy, and I worked on that show that won the Emmy Award. So that was kind of cool. It looks good on the resume.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And, you know, Animal Crackers, which was that famous comic strip, which was around forever. They did an animated version of that, and I had the most amount of fun on that show. And then there was a whole bunch of other ones, like Treasure, I think it was a UK production. Flight Squad, which was just brutal because it was very lifelike with a lot of airplanes and stuff, which they did computer animation on. So after 8 years, there was tons of layoffs. My official title was a layout artist. And the amount of times I was laid off, I ended up saying, "Oh, I'm a layoff artist." So, I had just had enough. And then, you know, I was living in Montreal, Quebec, where the main language was not English. So my jobs were very few and far between to survive. And then I answered an ad, how to draw cartoons for kids. And that was what, you know, I worked with this guy for a number of months, and then I ended up meeting my wife online. And so I left Montreal and moved north of Toronto. And then I opened up my own business, and I've been doing that for the past 8.5 years. You know, but I got into Trendmasters kind of by accident, because I remember back in the 90s, I had a Slimer toy that Trendmasters made. Had no idea. I just liked Ghostbusters like everybody, and I liked toys, always did. And I ended up, I think, giving it to somebody else. But the thing that really got me hooked on Trendmasters was Osmosis Jones. Now, I'm a huge fan of the film and have probably the most amount of stuff, more than anyone, because nobody else has proved me otherwise. I have a box of over 1,000 pieces of artwork, a bunch of original pieces, the vinyl posters, you know, the booklets, press kits. And then the entire prototype line of there was, 21 toys that were never produced?
Wow.
So, you know, from that, got into the animated Godzilla. And then as I focused on that, this was back in 2003 is when it started. I was just on the hunt for Osmosis Jones. And I've always been very resourceful. If I told you the story of how I was able to track this stuff down and learn about Trendmasters, it's not that long, but I don't know if I'm going to end up monopolizing the conversation.
No, I actually, you're jumping ahead of my crazy questions. So please go ahead. I'm actually fascinated by this.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting story, because I had the vinyl banner of Drix, which was the huge, he was built like a tank, and he's actually like a pill capsule, and Drixenol. And
now is this an Osmosis Jones item? Because I have to be frank, I've not seen that.
Yes. Okay. Drixenol was the David Hyde Pierce character who was, you know, the sidekick of Chris Rock, who was Osmosis Jones.
Gotcha.
So I for 2 years after, you know, the movie came out in 2001, didn't do very well. It actually bombed. And I always wondered, why was there no toys made on this movie? Because they've made toys on films that I thought were horrible. So I, you know, was Googling one day, and I actually was Googling for a while, and I never found anything. Then all of a sudden I found a tiny little thumbnail about an inch by an inch in size. And I said, well, wait a minute, that looks like Drix. And my heart started pounding. A very passionate guy, especially for this type of stuff. So I found out it was a toy that was made by Trendmasters, and it was Drix, in fact, and it was from Toy Fair. So there was a small, you know, a couple of other photos, and I was like, oh my God. Ironically, at that exact moment, I went to eBay and typed up Osmosis Jones, and sure enough, I found a set of the 2 10-inch prototype figures, and my heart was pounding. They were up at $50, and I was like, oh my God. And I had this massive, massive computer monitor The thing itself looked like some bulky TV microwave. And I waited, you know, because I've been on eBay 17 plus years. Wow. And always been active. So I know that stuff like the back of my hand. So I waited till the last minute to place my bid, and sure enough, my computer froze.
Gotta love it.
I literally screamed, no, and I started crying, and I was like, oh, this can't be happening. This can't be, like, how did I miss it? And the auction closed, I think it was like 51-33 or something like that. Now, I know who the guy is that won the auction. I've been in touch with him, you know, even a year and a half ago, and I remember I was so upset. I wrote, and that was back when you could see who was bidding and, you know, who the.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. So yeah. I wrote to the guy and I said, listen, you know, it's a long, complicated story. I said, I'll give you $250 just for the Drix. He said, no. And it was like that. I mean, there was no conversation. He was just like, no, I just want it. And I didn't know he already had one.
Wow.
So I was like, you greedy, greedy person.
Backing up just a sec, would you say that your interest in animation, I mean, let's talk about Osmosis Jones as a property. As a professional animator, what about that movie interests you so much? I'm just curious.
Well, I'm a health nut. I'm a diabetic and, you know, always maintained exercise since the age of 16, and I'm far older than that now. And Osmosis Jones, like the whole thing about the Drix vinyl banner poster, it says the medication with dedication. And that got to me. That got nice. To me. And I thought, well, this is, you know, he's a cold capsule. His head is a cold capsule pill. And he has this massive body, which was kind of like, you know, the Iron Giant. And he's kind of like got an effervescence hovering. I don't know. You know, you got to see the movie because it's I was reading somebody had posted because I was friendly with the director. One of the directors, there was two directors. And, you know, the movie didn't do so well because the Farrelly brothers did the live action with Bill Murray. And Bill Murray looked pretty horrible, but I guess that was part of the part he was playing. The animated sequences, because it was 2/3 animation, 1/3 live action, mm-hmm. The animation sequences were brilliant. And a couple of the guys that I went to school with at Sheridan worked on the film. And there was one character, one person in particular, it was Ricardo Curtis. I remember he was graduated, I think, the year ahead of me. And I remember cell painting on his film in school to graduate. Like we had to, you know, as being younger than the third year animation group, you had to take part in helping them complete their films. And we were self-painting. Oh, wow. So I remember Ricardo Curtis ended up animating Osmosis Jones. But, you know, my favorite, I always seem to favor the villains. And this was Thrax, who was a nasty, nasty purple reddish guy with kind of like purple dreads. And he was like a bad virus that was out to kill everybody. And his plan was when he infected Bill Murray was to kill him as fast as possible. So it's up to Osmosis Jones, the white blood cell cop, along with Drix and all, Drix, to save the day. So anyways, long story short, here I am recommending two movies for you guys, The Iron Giant and Osmosis Jones. So
they're on the list.
I wrote to the seller of the Osmosis prototypes. And I said, please tell me you have another set of these. And he wrote back. He said, I did, but they sold the week before. And I was like, you know, so. And then he said, I also had the car. And I was like, the car. And I was able to, you know, you check the completed listings. And I said, oh, my God, that thing is beautiful. And that was a resin prototype. Now, the resin pieces are always far rarer than the plastic versions because those are the pieces usually for the catalog shoots and for Toy Fair.
Yeah, I actually was going to get to that a bit later about resin versus plastic, but yeah,
right,
okay.
Right. So, and of course, this guy who won the set of Osmosis figures, he got the damn car.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was like, oh, you got to be kidding. Because I saw, I remember I asked him to see some photos, and I was like, is that the car? And then I found out, you know, he was the same guy. So I stayed on the seller of the Osmosis prototypes, and he said, I'll see what I could do. I'll see, you know, because I had some friends that worked there, whatever. And I think 2 weeks went by and he found these were the 10-inch versions that I missed out on. But he found like one of the 5-inch mini-er versions. And I was like, OK, that's cool. And of course, the price was double. And I was like, you know what? At the time, I was just so like excited. I was like, sure, take my money. And, you know, so that came through. Now, in the meantime, I was finding out, okay, so I knew there was 5 Osmosis toys at the time, and none of them had come out. So I ended up making a little comp in Photoshop and had some writing. I'm looking for these toys. I'm looking for guys that worked at Trendmasters, anything, if you can help me. So I went and did my investigation of Trendmasters, found out they were based in St. Louis, Missouri. They closed down in the fall of 2002. Mm-hmm. And I then proceeded to scan through 8,000 listings of sellers in St. Louis, Missouri. Everyone that was selling toys, toy figures, whatever, I wrote to them, sent them the photo, and said, I'm looking for these toys.
So my goodness, that is hardcore enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, here we go. I sent 800 emails, copy, paste, boom, boom, boom. And I would say I did pretty good with the responses, maybe 400, maybe 450. And I was just, you know, the responses were like, no idea what Trendmasters is, never heard of Osmosis Jones, what is Drix, I can't help you, sorry, you know. And then all of a sudden, after 2 weeks, I was just like so frustrated. I said, what else can I do? I can't teleport over there. I can't hop on a plane and, you know, go to St. Louis and say, well, where were the offices? Maybe there's one lying on the street or something. So things went quiet. 2.5 weeks after I sent all the emails, I got an email from the head designer who worked on the Osmosis lines. And he said, your message was just passed to me. I have everything you're looking for plus more. And I was like, hallelujah. The big glow. You know, and it was like you can hear the crowd roaring in the background in my imagination. Wow. So, you know, we kept in touch, and he started sending me photos. And all of a sudden, I was like, what the hell is that? Oh, my God, look at that. Look at that. And I was just like, yeah, I want it all. And at that time, you know, I didn't even have a PayPal account. But this guy was willing to part with everything because he had multiples. He had, three to six of almost every piece. That's so, I made a major purchase, two major purchases over a few months. And, you know, like the next day when shipping was fast and, you know, they used FedEx, I got the knock on the door and I was like, this is what I missed on eBay. Hmm. So, I stayed on with this guy. And the classic story was I had gotten everything from the line, but I was missing an Osmosis keychain and these two of the deluxe versions of Drix and Osmosis Jones. I did not have those. This guy, I didn't even see his. He had sent me one, and he was using something to photograph the toys, which he said was like his VCR. They were horrible little tiny thumbnails, maybe 2 inches by 2 inches. And I'm like, what is that? And they were dark, and you know, he'd put a Coke can beside for size reference. So, you know, I would blow them up, and I'm like, yeah, I want that, I want that. And all of a sudden, he's like, you know what? That's off the table. And I'm like, huh? And he just like shut it down. And then it became, I guess, you know, throughout the years, I kept in touch with him for many, many years. And I would ask him about the animated Godzilla stuff. He never worked on that line. And he had some prototypes. And he said, I'm not giving this stuff up. So the thing was, is when he would show me certain photos, I'd see all these, like, he says, yeah, I've got about six of the Hemotrooper Osmosis cars or nine of them or something. I was just like, and you don't want to give any of those up. I'm like, wow. Okay. And he worked on them. He designed them. He sent me some of the, you know, the design art package sheets. And I was like, wow, amazing. And I have no idea because I'm looking at this Iron Giant robot that's in pieces in front of me. And I'm trying to imagine drawing all this stuff with my, you know, with my classical animation background. Everything would be a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, this guy, you know, it was great. And so from there, I remember because I had asked him a question. I think what was the date? Because I have it up here. I asked him about Dracotron. I guess I say Draco because of Drac. I think of Dracula. But you said on the show they said Draco, so I have no idea. I haven't seen that. But this was an email from him back in 2007. And if you want, I mean, I can read it to you. It was kind of funny.
Sure.
He said, okay, because there was a link that I had sent him, which you guys, I'm sure, have seen, that has – there's one guy online that has the Dracotron that was all like kind of chromed. Uh-huh. And he said this was the only Voltron figure that was unproduced or unreleased, and that is not true. There was those set of the cycles. If you remember, Gregory, I had posted the images of all the cycles that never – there were the Voltrex cycles.
Yes.
That
yes.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. So those were quite nice. Anyway, so his email said, Jonathan, I checked out the site that you sent. That is indeed the Dracotron Voltron thing. There was another one we did that I think went unproduced called Stealth Voltron, but I guess, you know, that was released, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay. He says that was all black and such. As for the Draco, that is the first one I've seen done up black and in chrome. So the suits and weapons for the characters that would fit in them as well, like Hunk, Allura, Pidge. I was stuck working on Voltron's ABCs a lot because they were more complex than others and required a lot of explaining to the Hong Kong office as to what we wanted. I say stuck because the first one was fun, but by the mid was by my third or fourth Voltron, I was kind of tired of working on it. The rights to Voltron were owned by a guy in St. Louis that ran Channel 11 TV here.
That would be Ted Koppler.
Yes, Ted Koppler. He said, that's pretty much how we gained the rights to do Voltron here. I remember the faxes at one point describing how hard it was to get the original tooling for the larger metal figure, as they were owned by a friend's friend of some friend's friend. The ABCs I did for Dracotron had all the dino pieces in Voltron colors, so it's kind of hard to make out what is going on when it's all chromed up. I didn't think this went beyond the prototype stage, but that pick is definitely a tooling early production sample, as you can't chrome resin. My guess is there's only 12 of them at most, as that was the norm.
Okay.
So, you know, that was because there was somebody who specifically wrote to me asking for information about the Dracotron. Now, when I picked up the Dracotron prototype, you know, that I had, was it was not that long ago. It was maybe 2.5 years ago. And that was on eBay. And I was amazed, because that was a guy I had dealt with many times. He was not connected to Trendmasters. And I was like, am I looking at the real thing for that price? And I snagged it. And I was like, oh, my God, that's it. And it was beautiful. And I wrote to him, and I used to, you know, he said, you know, you drive me nuts always asking me for Trendmasters prototypes. And I'm like, well, you know what? I have to do that, because it's a passion of mine. And, you know, you're a good source, and I've gotten a lot of great stuff from you. So I got it. And he says, I've had this sitting in a box for 10 years.
Oh, my word.
Wow.
I would love to get my paws on one, just to at least look at it up close, face to face. Dracotron is a pretty incredible design from the Voltron, the Third Dimension show, and it's one of those legendary items that we Voltron collectors really would like to get our paws on.
It was quite beautiful indeed. Now, I don't have it anymore. I don't know if I've let that out before or not, but I ended up trading it for another piece that I wanted even more. And trust me, it was a very tough thing to do, because the piece I got, I think, was probably even rarer than the Dracotron. It was a Godzilla thing, so it was like a very even trade. But, you know, I that's why I photographed that thing many times, and I looked at it, and I said, wow, this thing's quite something. And it was, you know, it had the same type of chrome in part that I know that was an issue with the Trendmaster toys for some of the other parts that would peel off, and, you know, the electroplating and whatever. But the Dracotron was in perfect condition.
That's incredible.
It was as close to a final production toy as I think you can imagine.
Hmm.
It was missing those two little red pieces on the head, which were like ears, but that was it. So
that's remarkable.
Yeah.
So you know, we've kind of I kind of had a little script of questions I was hoping to spin through. You've actually touched on several of these items so far.
Okay.
I guess so. Well, I mean, one of the things I was going to ask was, did you collect toys much before you became a Trendmasters fan? You mentioned that Slimer was kind of the hook that drew you in, and Osmosis Jones even more so.
Right.
What was your collecting background, if any, before Trendmasters?
I always, you know, I would go and get the McDonald's Happy Meal toys. I wouldn't eat the food, but I would get the Happy. Yeah, you know, the people are always like, "What, you just want the toy?" Yeah, I just want the toy. I can't eat your food. I mean, the funny thing was is, and here's another interesting story. It's a little bit off topic, but it is relative. I had a photo when I'm 9 years old with an amazing vintage Mattel Hot Wheels set that it was like a construction, had a yellow truck, and you had a handle with there was a chain that connected to the truck, and you would load up pipes and diamonds and whatever. And I had a photo of it. And I remember when I had just joined up on the vintage toy site on Facebook, I had no idea what this was called anymore, but I had this one photo. I didn't look very happy. I mean, there I was sitting with the toy behind me, and I posted the image on the Facebook vintage toy site within a second. Oh, someone said, oh, that's the Hot Wheels Road King Mountain Mining set. And I was like, boom. I go to eBay again, and there it is. It's like always the weird type of thing. So, you know, that's the sign that you're supposed to have this. And I ended up winning this play set. And the guy's photos, you know, they were nice, but I couldn't tell that there was parts that were broken, so it didn't work. And I said, listen, you know, you didn't state that. So, you know, he ended up giving me a partial refund. And then about 2 months later, a brand new one in the box from 1973. And I was just like, holy crap. And that one I won for even less money. So I ended up selling off the other one I had. And me, I'm very specific about what, you know, the issues are. I took photos. I said, well, this doesn't work properly. But I said, keep that in mind. You know, you may be able to fix this if you're good with rubber or whatever. So that was a toy that, you know, I was – it's like recapturing your youth, right? Something I had when I was 9 years old. That was one of my favorite toys ever. And I've always just been a – I don't know. I've always been – I mean, I'm the youngest of three brothers. And I, you know, liked my little stuffed plushes of the coyote and whatever. And I remember my brother throwing them down the stairs when I was, you know, and his eye cracked. And I was very upset. But, you know, now, you know, I'm sitting here. It's like my office, the toy room, and where I, you know, do my drawings and whatever. It's, I'm surrounded by toys, surrounded. And, you know, we have
as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, yeah. You know, you have a child and he's not actually into the toys right now. But, you know, he's obviously going to be the successor when I'm gone, that all this stuff will maybe be able to buy him a house. I have no idea. But yeah, so that, you know, I've always had the love for the toys, but I didn't go on a crazy tangent collecting them until the floodgate opened up when, you know, I got the email from the head designer of the Osmosis line.
How did you make that transition then from toys to prototypes and test shots and that sort of thing? Because that's a very specialized interest, obviously.
Yeah.
Was it basically the good fortune of meeting the Osmosis Jones designer? Was that basically the starting point?
Well, you know, I was pretty fascinated to hear some of the stories and look at the design sketches, considering, you know, that was kind of, you know, relative to my background and stuff. And I came to the conclusion that if I was living in the States and I had my animation background, I would have for sure gone to Trendmasters for a job.
Wow.
So, you know, because you, and it's funny enough, there's another one of my contacts there who's a friend. He's also the same history as me. He's a product of classical animation. That's his background. And he designed a lot of the Dexter's Lab toys. Guy's an amazing, amazing artist.
Okay. So what's the difference between person who does character designs for a cartoon and then person who does toy designs based on a cartoon?
I wouldn't think too much, you know, because you've still got to be able to be aware of drawing three-dimensionally. But for the toys, you're basically dissecting them. Like, this is how the head would, you know, connect. So you'd cut the head in half and show the mechanisms inside for, you know, the battery compartments, electronics, and all that type of stuff. That's what's amazing, because that would have me totally confused. So I don't know where these guys got how this stuff was going to be put together properly and then draw it. Like some of the design sheets I have of the Osmosis car, it's like split in half and you're seeing all the mechanics of it in the inside, you know, because it has a pullback action and, you know, the headlights would light up and stuff. And I wouldn't know, you know, how to do any of that stuff. But I guess I didn't know how to draw cartoons. So maybe somebody, you know, gives you a little bit of a teaching lesson and you go from there. And then I guess once you get the hang of it, everything is natural, because this apparently the head designer guy of the Osmosis line, if I was reading this correctly, I think he used to be a dishwasher, you know, a long time ago. So he says it was not the best job for someone that had designing abilities. Mm-hmm. So I've always been artistic. I'm also a drummer. So, you know, it's all relative.
It's very interesting. We talk about the sort of leap there between, you know, designing for animation versus designing for toys. I would not consider myself an artist. I'm a creative person, but I wouldn't say I'm nowhere near professional caliber in any of that stuff. But I've been designing my own custom toy for Voltron, actually. And I have to tell you, designing something from the outside in so that it looks good, and designing it from the inside out so that it actually assembles and functions, it's quite a mind bender.
Yeah.
So what would you say are some of your favorite Trendmasters lines, and within those lines, some of your favorite prototypes?
Well, definitely the Osmosis line. I just thought, you know, that people criticized, you know, let's say the Godzilla characters for looking like they've just come out of the gym and they've been on steroids or something. And my defense to that was, you know what, their lines just had their own character. And that is what basically made them stand out. There was, I think, some of the Ghostbusters, the Extreme Ghostbusters line, that was not a big favorite with the fans. I never saw the show because I think the costumes and the coloring and stuff was all off. I've seen tons of people recently on some of these Ghostbuster pages that have repainted the figures as they were to make them look more like they were on the TV show. But when I look at the Osmosis line, and this is the sad thing, because there was a lot of hatred towards Trendmasters, I think a lot due based on their Godzilla stuff, but there was from what I heard, there was as much stuff that was released, there was equally as much, if not more, that was unreleased. And let me tell you, the unreleased stuff is what I like the most because it is just killer. And I think if all that stuff was released, I think it would have come out a little bit differently because the prototypes are always, you know, the resins are always much nicer looking, sharper detail, better paint jobs and all that type of stuff. But I think they just stood out in a category all by themselves. And, you know, I think they were the third largest company under Mattel when they were, you know, kicking it. You know, they were around from 89 to 2002.
Wow. Yeah, 89 in someone's garage.
Huh. Nice. Well, I guess you got to start somewhere. That's incredible. A lot of computer companies began in garages. So let's talk about items that had never been released. Would you say the Godzilla stuff, the unreleased Godzilla stuff, is among your favorites, or there's some other lines with unreleased items that are noteworthy?
I have the funny thing is I probably have the most amount of Godzilla prototypes, and I'm not even that big of a fan. I mean, growing up, when I was 12, 13, 14, you know, you'd see the movies Destroy All Monsters. But, you know, you knew it was somebody in the suit. So it was purely entertainment for me. I just enjoyed seeing, you know, the monsters battling it out and how, you know, how it looked with the miniatures and stuff like that. But I guess the Godzilla was definitely probably the biggest line for Trendmasters. So there was just, you know, lots and lots of prototypes. You just had to know where to look. I definitely, you know, I don't know if it's considered luck or not. It was probably more so timing. But, you know, the stuff that I have is great. But when I'm reading, you know, people's comments about them, I'm like, you know what? Like, I had to leave some of the forums because it was just completely, you know, futile to even try to attempt arguing because they were so set in their ways of how, well, no, Godzilla didn't look like that. You know, the shoulders and the big biceps. And I'm thinking, you guys are yelling, but you're forgetting it was people in suits. You know, so right. So what if they right. gave it muscles? It was still the same character. So what, you know, the Biollante, they were very upset because Trendmasters gave that character legs. And I thought, hey, I didn't even know anything when I first started seeing that character. And I was like, what is that thing? You know, it had the six tentacles and I didn't even know it was a product of Godzilla and I didn't even know it was female. And so that's why I was out of the woods for that. But I just remember arguing with people, well, why would they give Biollante legs? You know, she never had legs. I said, well, that was just their take on the character, and I, you know, give them some credit for the originality. And to me, that it just has character.
Yeah.
So, yep. You know, they're not Monster Arts. It's not Bandai or whatever all that type of stuff is, and you know, the Marmot and whatever. I don't know any of that stuff. You ask me about Trendmasters, I can tell you, but I, you know, I wasn't there, so I don't know what they were thinking when they were designing that character. Maybe it had something to do with, you know, the ones that I've seen. There's these huge Biollantes that, you know, sell for hundreds of dollars. And, you know, she's just got this big solid base of roots. And, like, you know, because she's made up of, you know, the flowers and plants and whatnot. I don't know if that was – they needed some more play value. So they gave her legs as if, you know, she could move around better or whatever. There was only one tiny micro battle play set of Biollante where she's about an inch and a half, if that, and she doesn't have legs. I don't know why for the micro battle playset they didn't do that. They actually made her the way she was in the films. But you know, there was a lot of like the Godzilla Doom Island line, which was the last of the classic Godzillas before the 1998 movie, and that was pegged to be their biggest and baddest line. And I just absolutely adore the packaging. You know, the burning Godzilla, the logo was great. It was just, you know, everything was fiery, the colors, the blues, the orange, the yellows. It was fantastic. I mean, you know, Godzilla Wars, I haven't even seen the movie. People said it was a horrible film. But, you know, the Trendmasters did the toy line for that. And then basically for the Doom Island line, they were using the same figure sculpts and they added a black wash over top of all the characters. And that totally, man, you know, you should see when I posted anniversary 9-pack set, they did one for the Godzilla King of the Monsters line, Godzilla Wars line. Then there was a repaint version where they just doused them in very bright, almost neon colors, which was kind of a cool original idea. And then there was the you know, they did one also for Tarzan, but there was the Doom Island 9-pack set that I'd only seen one other person that had it. and it was on the Club Tokyo site. And I was like, wow. And I think the one that I own is actually the same one that's on the Club Tokyo set.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. I have to tell you, your knowledge of these items is fascinating to me. It actually sort of parallels some of the Voltron collectors that I've encountered where, you know, you had talked about the die-cast Voltron item that was a re-release of a mold that Matchbox had popularized in the 80s. And there is a subgroup of Voltron fans that can tell you every legitimate and bootleg variant of that metal, that die-cast mold that you can possibly imagine. The level of detail of their knowledge it sort of parallels yours with Trendmasters, but because Trendmasters, of course, offered so many things and not just the one mold, the breadth of your knowledge is fascinating to me.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, but you know what? I did that because I've always been very, very resourceful. I have all of the Trendmaster catalogs pretty well in duplicates from 1994 to 2002, because you got to have one that you look through all the time and you got to have one that you try to keep in better condition. So, you know, often when you have the catalogs, that would show a bunch of the stuff that nobody else would ever see that never came out. So I knew what to look for. So I remember, you know, talking about, you know, this, the Voltron, Voltrek cycles. I just pulled up an image right now. You know, they were all color coordinated to the outfits that, you know, the Voltron characters were looking at. And this one in front of me here I think it's Keith. So his is red. You know, actually, you know what? My mistake. I'm looking at it and it does say Lance. Okay. And I've got reading glasses on now too. So, and I remember I was chatting with some other guy who was a Trendmasters employee and we were on Skype. And he had the visuals and he said, yeah, I've got a ton of Voltron prototypes. So I was like, oh, okay. What do you got? You know? And he holds up this cycle and I'm looking at it and I go, well, it's pretty big. And he had no idea what it was. Didn't know if it was released. And I never got any still images from him. He was actually a photographer at Trendmasters. I think he photographed a bunch of the stuff for the catalogs. Promised me over and over again, I'll send you some photos. You know, we'll talk about the deal. He says, but my daughter wants me to keep everything. And I was like, okay, you know, and you can't put a gun to anyone's head. But my thing that gets to me is if you have all this stuff and it's sitting in a box under your stairs, what's the point of keeping it?
Yeah.
You know, because I lost my mom in 2000 and it made me realize life is very short and it's shorter for some people. And when I had this massive collection on the rock group, The Police, and I basically traded all that stuff away to start, you know, funding my Trendmasters prototypes. And because that stuff is expensive. And I made a vow to keep everything out on display so I can look at it every day. And that's all you can do. I don't sit here and play with the toys. And it's funny because I said I've got screws, nuts and bolts and Iron Giant parts all over the place here. And I'm frustrated because I can't get certain things to fit because the prototypes had some different molds. So some stuff's like, oh, well, that fits nice. And I'm like, why is there a gap there? Anyway, so this guy is holding up, I think, did he have one or two cycles? Or maybe it was just one. I think it was the dark green one. Let me just see who that one was. I'll just flip
Pidge
through the photos here. Well, was it Pidge?
Yeah, Pidge is green.
Yeah. No, actually, this one is Keith. So, wait. Pidge's was on the photo here from Trendmasters. This was more of a pine green, and the other green was more of like a bluish green. So I think this is the one. I think it was Keith's that he had. And I'm looking at this because it had like a dragon face, right? and so that would be, I mean, I guess it was supposed to be a dinosaur for Voltrex. And it was three wheels from what it looked like. And even from the photo, it kind of looks that way. And I thought, well, that's really neat. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know I had images of that in the 2000 catalog, which is what I posted on the prototype page. And, you know, he never got back to me. We chatted on Skype for 3 hours. 3 hours. And then he ended up, he cut me off on Facebook. He just deleted me. And I never, you know, because the interesting thing is there's a, you know, people just, they don't want to deal. And I here I am saying, hey, and I would show my excitement, obviously, because I was excited. And I thought, well, that's really cool. I had no idea what that was. And then, you know, I remember I made contact with him a year and a half after he like cut me out. And I said, you know, can we discuss those cycles? He's like, no. They're in storage, and storage is like 60 miles away, so it's not worth it for me anymore. And I'm like, but you know, because they were talking about flooding or whatever, and he was worried about, you know, I have to photograph everything, and I have to categorize it, and I have to discuss it with my daughter. And then all of a sudden I got, you know, it was brushed off. Mm-hmm. So I can I fault him for that? No, I was upset because I was kind of left hanging, and, you know, I was just, I'd love to have those because where are they? They're sitting in someone's storage in a box, out of sunlight, out of display. Nobody knows about them. I don't know if those were the same ones that were used in the catalog. This guy photographed the catalog parts, so maybe they were, but now no one's going to see them.
Now, to give some context to Voltron fans, Voltrex was released in toy form, and basically it was six dinosaurs that would combine into a newly designed Voltron-style robot. And my understanding from Mark, when you and Shannon and I had, Shannon Weir and I had discussed the third dimension, is that this design probably would have been featured in a in a batch of episodes that wound up never getting produced.
Right, that was what she said.
Yeah, so I just want to give a little context to folks, to Voltron fans who might not know what Voltrex is. If we could jump into Voltron a bit, what are some of the what were some of the items from Voltron? Now, I realize you're not a Voltron fan per se, but I really wanted for Mark and I to speak with you because you have a very unique perspective of the property through your interest in Trendmasters as a whole. So given your animation background, your interest in Trendmasters as a whole, what items from Voltron stand out in your mind as being particularly cool?
Well, these cycles are definitely neat. And like I said, it's because it's unreleased, that's where my interest goes that much higher, because they were not mass produced. Nobody else really has them. And of course the Dracotron, that thing was just so complicated. How would they even made a toy of that? That seemed to be pretty TV accurate. The way I looked at it,
have been a huge challenge.
Yeah. And I think, Greg, you sent me a bunch of screen caps, or you posted a bunch of those, right? From that. Dracotron.
Yeah, I did on that Facebook group, Mark. I had posted some screen caps from one of the Dracotron episodes on the group, just to give a little bit of comparison to the
was the that prototype. Character in more than one episode?
Or was Dracotron episode? Was in two episodes, and in the first one, he was actually beheaded and sort of went off into oblivion and was sort of thought to be destroyed. But in the second appearance, he was back in action again. And it was an entirely different kind of story. It wasn't just straight combat like the first one. So it actually was revealed to be the individual dragons were sort of revealed to be semi-sentient, which was kind of cool, or at least sort of alive, if you will. So it was kind of, it was sort of a Star Trekian story where, you know, they sort of thought that they were evil, but no, they were just trying to do their own thing. Let's just leave them alone, that sort of a thing. So it actually appeared in two different episodes.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. So going on, Voltron as a whole, the toy line from Trendmasters, how would you rate it compared to many of the other lines that you have encountered from that company, Godzilla and various other lines?
Well, to be honest, I haven't had a lot of the figures, even prototype wise. You know, I had three different 12-inch resin stealth prototypes. I had the Dracotron, and I have a very nice carded 5.5-inch Galaxy Guard Voltron, which is unpainted on a mock-up Galoob card for Ultra Force, which is quite beautiful. And you know, that type of stuff stands out to me. And I guess I'm sure it's a one of a kind piece.
Do you have any pictures of those?
Yeah, they're all on the in the group.
Do you mind if we share a few of those on the podcast notes page for this podcast?
Sure. So how you mean people are going to be able to see that?
Yeah, online on letsvoltron.com.
Okay, sure. We could do that.
I can
send them to you. Not a problem. I also have, and this is pretty cool. It's a hunk resin. It's the original resin tooling piece that was used to make the plastic figures.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's on a mock-up Barney the Dinosaur card. And it's got purple clay on it, which was used for making the copies.
Oh, that's incredible. How
yeah.
cool.
So, you know, there was a bunch of, I mean, it wasn't all the characters, but I seem to favor Hunk, the most. I'm not crazy about his name, but you know, it's the bigger guy. I thought it was, you know, he's my favorite of the character, you know, of all five of these characters from the show. And you know, something like that is just very unique, because first of all, you know, Barney the dinosaur, everybody knows Barney the dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Why they chose to, you know, often these were done up as mock-ups so that they would test the placement of the characters and the accessories in the plastic casing.
Sure.
My favorite purple dinosaur is still Dino.
Well, yeah, you can never. Yeah, we grew up with him, and you know, with my son, the age that he is, the Flintstones. You know, we've been through, I think, 8 box sets from Costco of the entire 166 episodes.
Oh my!
So it plays in constant rotation here, and wow. You know, I loved that show growing up. But I'll tell you, you can definitely appreciate the fact that it's real life. You know, I mean, the stuff that they're arguing about, the taxes or money and you know, uh-huh. And it was, you know, I mean, weird off topic, but the Jetsons, when that thing came up as the complete opposite side of things for the Flintstones, did you guys know that when the first season aired, there was a gap of 22 years before the second season came out?
I heard that it was a long gap.
They had the same voice cast. But I don't know what the issue was then, but because I wondered, you know, I bought the first season. There's 4 discs. I don't know how many episodes, if it's like 6 or 7 episodes on each disc. And then the second season, I said, well, why does it look different? And they had this weird little robot that hung around at the end. It was kind of like when they added Scrappy-Doo to Scooby-Doo.
Those,
I'm done with that. Yeah, Orbity. Yeah. So yeah. That you know, and my son doesn't like it. He does not like the second show because – it's the same voice cast, but the music, the sound effects, everything is different. And of course, 22 years is, you know, yeah, later is not, you know, 2 months. It's not 2 years.
You can
so it wasn't the same vibe.
Did right. You hear what the conspiracy theory was about those 2 shows?
No, tell me.
The Bedrock thing and the whole Flintstones was actually a post-apocalyptic thing on Earth. And that the Sky City in... the Jetsons was the actual thing where they hadn't been affected by the apocalypse.
So there were contemporary stories.
So they were here. You have the Flintstones living in a post-apocalyptic world on Earth, on the ground, and then in the sky, they're living in the actual future.
Wow,
I did not at the same time.
I did not hear that.
That was a conspiracy theory.
Well, you know You know the Flintstones was based on the Honeymooners, right?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
And Jackie Gleason was supposed to be the voice.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, and then there was the fallout or something, and then that never happened. But, you know, there's even an episode where Fred says, yeah, what are you? You think you're Jackie Gleason?
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
So, you know, but they had to change things around or else, I don't know if Jackie Gleason was going to be upset or there was going to be a lawsuit. But, yeah, there was that was what it was based on, the Honeymooners. And, you know, I mean, even the Honeymooners is great because they have this, I mean, you know, he was a very loudmouth type of character, as is Fred. Fred's always angry. And Wilma, you know, reminds me of my mother. And Betty reminds me of my mother's best friend. Wow. So certain things that Wilma says, I was just like, wow, it's like my mother is still there, you know?
That's funny. So if we may sort of go back into the Voltron realm.
Sure.
Many collectors of the Trendmasters Voltron items, and I have to include myself in this group, have found that the actual production toys, many of them have become brittle over time. The plastic quality has tended to I don't know if it's decayed or degraded or if it was just always brittle out of the box and we didn't really notice until years later. And also that the vac metalized chrome can flake off and some of the other paint can flake off. Do you know if other lines that Trendmasters made had these kinds of problems, or do you think they might have been unique to Voltron?
No, I don't think it was unique to Voltron. I'm looking right in front of me. I have a boxed version from Tarzan, which is a very strange character. It's Kerchak, but they've given him total cyber armor and whatnot. And it's also got that kind of, you know, the electroplating stuff, but the paint is chipping off on that, and that's been sealed in the box.
Yeah.
So they were obviously using cheaper paints, I presume, for the production line, you know, because it was all about cost. And
sure.
The prototypes, to me, no problems. You know, I think if you remember, I had posted that photo of I have a unpainted hunk from the cycle, the four-wheeled cycle. And it had the test chrome plating. So the arms and legs are all chromed. And you can't chrome resin. Now, this is not resin, actually. It's plastic. So I don't know how exactly they did that, because it's not hand painted. So I don't, there's no chipping or anything on that. But, my only reference to answer that question is this figure in front of me, the cyber version of King Kerchak in the Tarzan box. And it's a very cool character. I mean, his face is purple. I don't really get how Kerchak, I have a 14 and a half inch resin hand painted prototype from Toy Fair, and that's a full on gorilla. And that was the same type of gorilla body and all that stuff that they used for King Kong, but they had, they had the King Kong line actually, but it didn't really go through. So I don't understand how you have a big furry ape and then you have this thing that the face looks like a prune and it's purple and he looks like a monster, but I don't know the whole story about, the epic adventures of Tarzan. Yeah. That was still an important line for them.
Yeah, I actually, in front of me now, I'm looking at, I have the blue stealth cycle from the third dimension. It's sealed in its original box, and you can see Princess Allura in the little window in the box, and the chrome on her right leg it almost looks like it's crystallizing, like it's flaking off and forming little weird, almost like shards. I'm reminded of Superman Returns when that crazy island made of kryptonite had all those crazy crystalline formations popping out of nowhere. Anyway, I really like the toys and their designs. It's a real bummer that in production something seemed to go a bit awry.
That's what Mark Oliver had said when we interviewed him about his toys. The flaking of the Trendmasters was one of the most disappointing things.
Yeah, I mean, the designs, I have to tell you, when I first saw the Voltron items at retail, I was not that impressed by the figures, because they tend to have that kind of big and buff look that you, Jonathan, had described of the Godzilla figures. And it was also becoming more popular during that time. I mean, the Hasbro Star Wars line of the mid-90s, just before the prequels came out, they had some pretty... muscular proportions and all that. So maybe it was just a trend for the time, but the figures didn't really go over that well with me at that point. But in more recent years, especially as I reexamined the third dimension as a television series for when I appeared here previously as a guest, I really gained a new appreciation for the designs of the figures. I like them quite a bit. It's just the execution. It just over time, the degrading of various things. It's a real shame, because the toys have some pretty cool designs.
Right, right. Well, so, I think it's probably safe to say you don't physically play with these, do you?
No.
Okay, so yeah, it's I've got that problem with resins. The resins are so fragile, and if they're solid resin, and I have a number of resin figures that are like that, and they've fallen over and things crack off. And it's one thing if it's a clean break, but if it becomes like a powder, you're screwed.
Oh yeah.
So, I would have no choice but to just deal with the fact that it's so long ago now, the paint's come off. Yeah, that's kind of rough. Some of them didn't. I don't know why that was. But I guess there was a question I didn't really answer, was why I was focusing on prototypes. And the production stuff was cool, was great. But I found that the prototypes, because I have a lot of unreleased, unproduced figures, they were just rarer and they were just more unique. And, I love to photograph them. It's all part of my artistic background. I had a lot of stuff. That, I mean, my basement office was just filled wall to wall. And when our son was about to be born, my wife said, we can't have it like this. It's got to be a family room. So I ended up selling off I had stuff on Scooby-Doo and Family Guy. I started going a little crazy. So I got rid of all that stuff, and now the prototypes have been contained into one, long, big cabinet that everything is visible. All the resins are, protected in glass, and they've got the little stands if they need it. But yeah, a lot of those things are so fragile because I'm accident prone, and I've broken a number of dishes that my wife, was very upset about. And she says, why is it you always break something? You never break your toys. And I'm like, I'm sorry, come here. So we go and I say, you see that? Oh, look there. See that? Those are all broken. So
I just don't tell you about it.
It's not a competition, but I do break my own stuff as well. She goes, well, those, you know, those dishes were very dear to me. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. And I said to her, did you want to go downstairs and knock one of my resins over to make yourself feel better? I don't know. So anyway, I like the prototypes and I think they're better made. And I, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy the chase. It can become frustrating if, you know, and the last two Osmosis figures, that was what I forgot to mention as well. 11 years it took me before I got them. I stayed on the same head designer 11 years.
Oh, my word.
And the thing was, I remember, like, there was a time we didn't talk for 4 years. I'd send him a message. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I haven't forgotten. When I dig them out of storage, I'll put them aside for you. And then all of a sudden, I think I found a bunch of photos that he had taken of. And I was like, oh, my God, he's got so many of this and this and this. And these, he had three. I think there was only three of the 10-inch deluxe resins of Osmosis Jones that were created. And he had them because him and his, you know, him, he worked in the prototype department. When the company was closing down, I was informed that, you know, they were able to take what was lying around, and they would fill up boxes and boxes and boxes. And, you know, did I mention boxes of prototypes? And I was like, wow. And so, and I said to him, oh, so you have this stuff. You sent me those photos and I see it all. I said, so it's got to be right there. He says, no, I packed it all away. And I was like, but you told me, you know, how many years ago that when you find the stuff, you'd set it aside for me. So I had to wait another year and a half, I think, before he says, okay, I got the stuff. And then I would say, okay, you know, so, you know, can we do this now? And, you know, you originally told me this and that. And he says, well, I don't think anyone else has these. So this is going to be the price. And, you know, I'm not happy to see the stuff go, but, you know, we talked about it. And, you know, if you wanted, this is how it's going to go. So, you know, I got them, it's almost 2 years ago. And I was like, I couldn't believe it because he sent it to me in the box. There's a huge Trendmaster sticker on there with my name. And I was like, oh, I got to keep that. And, you know, so, you know, it came right from the source. And, you know, I said to him, because he showed me, he had three of the Osmosis figures. Now, I'll tell you something. These blow away the plastic versions. This is K-resin. It's not resin, and it's not K-resin apparently is a form of plastic. So I was like, I had no idea. But this thing looked like it was made of glass. And it was just, you know, absolutely incredible. So it says, you know, K-resin was apparently used to replace transparent, you know, ABS or ABS, whatever it's called. And sometimes they'd, you know, come out smoky and yellow. But the K-resin was like an injected plastic that retained more of a glass look, more so for things like windshields of cars and whatnot. Now, because Osmosis was a white blood cell and, you know, he looked like, you know, he was this glob, gelatinous glob of blue, whatever, this K resin, you know, 10 inch prototype of him it's fantastic. And I'm so amazed that, you know, this stuff never came out. And the interesting thing was, the K resin to the plastic version, an enormous difference. Like I have two plastic versions, plus I have this K resin. And, you know, the K resin, it's translucent and it's just beautiful. It looks as good as the character has just come out of the movie screen and is sitting in front of you.
That's amazing.
Like, I can't believe how clear it is and whatever. So the fact that this guy had one perfect condition one. He had one that was, like, sliced at the waist, but he had all the parts. The one I got, I said to him, I don't care if it's – as long as it's got all the parts, I will fix it. And so the head had this screw in it, which was brutal. Late at night, my wife was asleep, and, you know, it was like 2 in the morning, and I'm doing some cutting on the cutting board in the kitchen and hoping that I'm not going to damage this thing. I was told, well, just cut it there, glue it there, attach this, whatever, boom. And I got it. So I put the head back on and, you know, it's definitely, you know, 11 years. Well, that, you know, that's I've been called pushy, but I call that persistence. You know, I mean, pushy would be, well, if I bugged him every week or every month. I mean, like I said, there was a period of 4 years we didn't talk, but I stayed on him. And I didn't give up. And as frustrating as it was, we used to speak on the phone and I was like, man, is this guy ever going to give this stuff up? You know, he's got three of them and they were sitting in boxes. So, like, honestly, I mean, I understand he worked on them. So it was very personal in that respect. But I'm guilty because I'm greedy. I have, you know, 5, 6, 7 multiples of some of the animated stuff and they're all different. If they were exactly the same and somebody had something they wanted to trade with me that I, or, you know, was begging me to buy, well, maybe I would let it go. I don't know. But I, there's, you know, there's certain things I didn't understand because I didn't work on it, I guess. But if someone bugged me, if I had a whole bunch of cells from Arthur that I drew or Caillou or something, oh, you know, I got to have those. My son loves it. My son, sure, sure, take it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, I don't know, maybe it's different because I just didn't have the passion for Arthur. It was a job. And that's probably why if I had the passion, then I would have watched it. I just, and people laugh. What do you mean you never, you worked on the show for 3.5 years? You never saw an episode? Never.
Wow.
My name's in the credits.
I've heard William Shatner say that he rarely watched a Star Trek episode. You know, I think when you live, eat, and breathe something like that morning and noon and night, day after day for 3 years, I can imagine you probably wouldn't want to watch yourself on TV after a while. But so I guess I can relate to that, or at least understand that. So you had talked about some of the Voltron items that the Trendmasters had designed but never released, namely the Voltrex cycles and Dracotron. Are you familiar with any others? You had told me one time when we were communicating through Facebook about a Voltron Sea Watch. What's that all about?
Oh, yeah, I think that was there was maybe only one of its kind. They did a popular line of Sea Watches. I have a couple, the Iron Giant being one of them, which is just unbelievably incredible because it has so many digital, with animation on it. I wouldn't even know how they go about doing that considering my background is in animation. How do they do that for a watch? You know, you'd see the Iron Giant talking, eating metal, and then you see him flying away and all that type of stuff. And I was like, holy, you know, just blew me away. And that for some reason never came out. And, so there was the Voltron watch that was the classic face of that character. Oh, I think I just posted that 12-inch walking robot that never came out as well. Do you remember that?
I remember you had posted about that. I don't recall the specifics of it enough because I know that they had a motorized version, but maybe that was the Cyber Sentinel Voltron, but maybe that's different than the one that you had posted.
I have to pull that up. Let me see. people always laugh at me or laugh. They're amazed. I have over 11,000 images of Trendmasters prototypes.
Wow.
So, I mean, I have to remember. I mean, it's in a bunch of different folders, but they're all pretty well categorized. They used the similar mechanisms for the Iron Giant walking robot, Robbie the robot walking robot, and Dexter's Lab. They used always the same mechanism. So, you know, it helps costs again.
Okay. Yeah, so that may not be the same thing as the Cyber Sentinel Voltron, which was actually released. If you would be willing to share a photo or two of that item along with the Voltrex cycles and certainly Dracotron with Mark, I think the fans would really get a kick out of that.
Yeah, sure. Most certainly.
Yeah, thank you.
12-inch wire remote class Voltron with light and sound. Voltron walks at the touch of a button, light up horns. Eyes and sword blast through the darkness, fire the chest missile, and sound the battle roar, lion head, fist. Okay. So that never came out.
Huh. Okay.
But it looks exactly like the 12-inch, standard Voltron.
Wow.
That's cool. So it's amazing to me how much Trendmasters seem to, it seems almost like they let their designers just go crazy and then, even if only a tiny fraction of the stuff actually made it to production, what an experience it must have been to be able to design all that stuff.
Yeah, and probably frustrating as well, as so much of the stuff just kind of went to waste. And they would, I had heard the prototypes were like $10,000 each and that they were being trashed and thrown into the garbage. Somebody was taking them out and selling them on eBay. So I'm pretty sure I got a bunch of those, you know. But you had mentioned, I think, in your intro of me that I have the largest collection of Trendmasters prototypes. That is not the case.
I have a good-sized collection.
No. The guy that I got the Voltron stuff from, I think he has the biggest. Obviously, because he worked there, and they have boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. I have a pretty good collection considering I was not an employee.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is, was it yesterday? I was doing a search, and I don't reveal too much stuff. I guess that's the way I am. But I was doing a search, and I came across a photo, and I was like, wow, that's a prototype. And I went further digging and found out it was been sitting there available at this store in the U.S. since mid-October. And I was like, I couldn't contact them because I couldn't find the contact. And I'm like, I'll buy that. And so I was, you know, I was doing my researching because that's what I do, very resourceful. I found the guy on Facebook. He added me. But and then you send him, you know, a private message. And I guess people that use their cell phones, because I'm not a cell phone guy. I do everything in front of the desktop. They don't know when you send them a message because their cell phone doesn't register that or something. So I'm like, well, how am I going to reach this guy? And then I found a link to the store. And then there's a store. There's the phone number. I'm calling the store over and over again. And it says open Sunday, you know, until 7 p.m. I called like 10 times, kept getting the answering machine. And then finally, I think I wrote to somebody else. And then, oh, I found them on eBay. And then I wrote to them. They wrote me back. And I was like, finally. So I bought the piece. And I, like, this is what I do. It's you know, you go searching and hunting. And, you know, was I enjoying that? No. But I was able to finally, you know, the guy says, yeah, it's still available. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, you've had it since October. I'll take it. And I'm looking at the pictures in the store. And I'm thinking, well, there it is. And they had posted something and they said, well, you know, we started off the day with a sale of a bunch of these Godzilla stuff. But this thing was sitting at the back. And I believe it's a hand-painted mock-up with a tiny resin figure. And I was just like, wow, I'll take that. You know, and that's, yeah, I seem to have some funds available. So I said, yeah, so that should be here. And then I'll post photos of it. But that's the type of stuff that I do. Because these things now, you know, so many years after Trendmaster closed, it's impossible to find. There was a flood on the market right around 2003. I was like, there was prototype after prototype. And when I got, you know, the Cyber Godzilla, which was, I know a lot of people love that about the animated Godzilla. It's kind of like the TV series Godzilla version of Dracotron, because it was the original Godzilla that died in the film. And then when they did the animated series, the aliens kind of resuscitated him and made him half robot. And then he fights Godzilla. And that is the coolest design. And right when I discovered that, I went to eBay, and there was the same seller that I lost the Osmosis stuff on. He had one of those, and I won it, paid an arm and a leg for it. And then the following week, he put up another one. I couldn't afford that one, but I have three of them now.
Wow.
So you know, and this is what I do. There was this will be the last thing I'll say. There was I was searching out, you know, the animated Godzilla stuff, and I remember Googling. There was a guy that had a ton of Godzilla stuff. I didn't recognize anything, but I saw a bit of a Trendmaster's Ultimate Godzilla, which was their biggest Godzilla from the 1998 film. I think he's about 18 inches high, and you know, the tail is just, it's heavy, it's 11 pounds, it's huge, whatever. And in the background, I saw a thing that looked like a light blue fin. And I, you know, I zoomed in like 400%. I go, is that one of the pieces from the anime? Oh, I said, wait a minute, I recognize the claw, that's the Cyberzilla. And this guy, I had to join a page, a Godzilla forum, and I wrote to him. I said, please write me back. Please write me back. And about 3 days later, I got a response. And he said, yeah, I have the 10-inch deluxe Cyber Godzilla and animated Godzilla. I believe he was the one that bought the other Cyber Godzilla right after I got mine. Well, so I stayed on this guy for 4 years. And I kept asking him, kept offering him, you know, will you take this for it? And he said, no. Will you take this? He goes, no, it's one of my best pieces. I'm sorry. Finally, I said, okay, look, this is the last thing I can do. I said, because, you know, I'm not made of money. This is what I got for you. He wrote back and he basically tacked on another $150 more for each figure. And I sold off some other prototypes that I liked. I had the money. I bought them both in a month. And so now I have three of each of these figures. And the Cyber Godzilla is, man, the pose, so dynamic. And it was a great character. It was only appeared in one episode. And it's kind of interesting that aliens had, you know, devised him to kill Godzilla. But, you know, he had the armor on. He had one robotic claw. And the pose was just something I'd never seen before. You know, for a Godzilla, you know, a lot of the figures that Trendmasters made of the classic Godzilla, he was just kind of, they would have to bend the knees a little bit and have them almost squatting. This character has one leg extended. The other leg is bent. He's kind of twisting. The arm is up. The face is kind of elevated, like, and his mouth is open. I thought, that's so amazing. And, you know, how are you going to play with it? It just looks good on the shelf, you know, but, and then I got a copy of the master tapes of most of the Trendmasters commercials. And there was only one Voltron commercial on there, I believe, because I think you had posted, I think, on my page, Greg, the other two or three commercials that I had never seen before. And so I was praying to God, because the guy that I got the master tapes from, he didn't go through everything that's on there. He just said there's like 10 Godzilla commercials. I didn't know which they were. And all I kept saying is, please, please, please have a commercial for the animated Godzilla. Please have a commercial for the. And sure enough, it says the animated Godzilla. I was like, oh, my God. And I, you know, it was like, what, 33-second commercial? The best of all the Godzilla commercials. So I posted it on YouTube. That thing got tons and tons. I mean, it's over, I don't know if it's a million and a half hits now or something like
wow.
that. It's been up for, well, I think it's a year and a half or two. And there was people that would say horrible things. And I just like, no, that's not, it's not Godzilla, it's Zilla. I'm just like, you know what, dude, I could be Barney the dinosaur for all I care. What's in a name? So I was, you know, you're arguing with these people about the ridiculous things. And I just delete the comment. But the commercial, I was like, wow, the kids. And they're here they are. I think they're using resin prototypes. Because I can notice some things are a little pointier. I have one resin deluxe Godzilla, and the other ones, the other five that I have are, you know, plastic versions that are all different from one another, but amazing. Amazing.
Well, wow. I got to tell you, I admire your passion, your persistence, and your just general interest in this stuff. I have my own niches of interest, and it's very interesting to hear you telling about your collecting tales with Trendmasters. So, Jonathan, I want to thank you for coming on here and speaking with us, especially for sharing your Voltron insights, but the insights into that company in general. I have to tell you, I knew very little about Trendmasters coming into this, and I certainly know a lot more now, and what they contributed to the toy market in the 90s in particular
was huge.
Pretty amazing stuff. So,
well, the funny thing is, when you and I were crossing paths on the Voltron page, I invite you to? I was hoping that one day you would join up, because there's most of the people on the page are Godzilla fans. There's a handful of Voltron. I think there's maybe 10 Voltron fans on there. You're one of them. So I don't know if I tried to lure you there or not, but
I don't recall, but I did eventually jump in, and it is a fascinating page.
Well, Mark Oliver is there, of course. And, you know, I know he's a big collector as well. So, you know, I've had contact with all these guys, but to be honest, with stresses of life, this is a hobby, but it keeps me sane. It really does. I lose my mind out of frustration trying to find these people and get in contact with them. But, you know, everyone has lives. I understand that. Everyone's busy. And if you have kids, well, hey, you're that much busier.
Mm-hmm.
I know that story.
Yep.
I think we all do. So thank you again, Jonathan. And I really appreciate you speaking with us.
Okay. Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks. See you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
It was a pleasure to have Jonathan Tchaikovsky on the program. He has an immense interest in the Trendmasters lines, not just for Voltron, but for all the other Trendmasters lines that were there from 1989 to 2002. So it'll be interesting what types of people come out of the new Playmates lines that we're talking about for Voltron Legendary Defender, and what kind of collectors are going to come out to, you know, to make that what might be 20 to 30 years from now, something that we're talking about again, you know? So what do you think about that, Greg?
Who's to say? I think that toy lines of the 80s have certainly sort of seen a renaissance in popularity. I think the third dimension, hopefully in part through this podcast, has gotten a new look from some fans. And Jonathan certainly provides a fascinating insight into not just Voltron, but various toy lines of the 90s. I think the 90s resurgence, as we've seen with recent Power Rangers re-releases, has shown that decade is becoming in vogue again in a retro sort of way. And I think I agree with you. I think that whatever Playmates comes up with for the Legendary Defender, for Voltron Legendary Defender, will stick around and be viewed favorably by not only us fans today, but by the folks tomorrow as well.
I just think it's going to be amazing when we can walk into these toy departments over at Walmart or Toys R Us or Target or Kmart or anywhere, and just see Voltron toys on the shelves again.
Yeah, I tell you, one of my most vivid memories of Voltron toys was there was a Kmart in the Dayton, Ohio area, which is probably long since gone. But I recall visiting this Kmart, and I believe both sides of one entire aisle were absolutely filled to the brim with Voltron merchandise from the various manufacturers of that era. So, you know, the Matchbox, LJN, Panache Plays, HG Toys, Impulse, you name it, it was there. And it was just incredible. And I also recall in the 90s seeing the Third Dimension toys all over Toys R Us, an enormous end cap display of the 20-inch 80s style Voltron and the Stealth Voltron. And standing there with my very limited funding as an undergraduate student, wondering which of those two big bots I could somehow swing the cash to buy. So yeah, I'm super excited about seeing Voltron return, not just to our televisions through Netflix, but also to toy stores and major retailers. So very cool stuff.
All right. Well, as we go out, I want to remind you guys to pick up the latest issue for Voltron From the Ashes by Dynamite Entertainment. At Voltron.com, issues 1 through 5 are available, with the final 6th issue coming out next month. So, until next time...
Let's Voltron!